Welcome to AARP on Voice Corps. I'm Kathy Cordy, and today I will be reading articles from the AARP June-July Magazine 2026. This first is the feature story, A Heart-to-Heart Talk with Your Ticker. It's been pumping, racing, and skipping your whole life. Here's how your heart keeps the beat and what you can do to help it stay strong. By Clint Carter. My grandpa Joe died the same way his sister and three brothers died. Heart attacks all around, and they all struck early. Joe was just 58 when his heart stopped. I never had the chance to meet the guy, but I inherited some of his genes. So as I cruise into my 50s, I can't help wondering, how many ticks does my own ticker have left? You might wonder the same about yours. Cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death in America, taking out more of us each year than all forms of cancer combined. Yet the truth is, I actually know very little about my heart. How does it work? What does it need? And is it planning to attack me? To find out, I'm going straight to the down with my own beating heart to pump it for answers. Why the heart beats. The chest cavity is booming like an engine room as we enter and summon the heart's attention. Hey, I didn't realize it would be so loud in here, heart. You want quiet? Take the elevator up the brain cavity. Down here, it's hard labor. You have about 10,000 miles of vessels in your body, and I have to keep the blood flowing through every inch. Wow, I had no idea. Impressed? You should be. You can live with just one kidney and half a liver, but if I shut down even a few minutes, you're in big trouble. Understood, but what's all the noise down there? Beautiful, ain't it? That's the sound of my valves snapping shut. Why do you snap them so hard? I have performance goals, pal. Each time I contract, I have to push down 50 to 70% of my blood volume. If my valves were as lazy as you are most days of the week, blood would start flowing backward. Then I wouldn't hit my numbers. I see. And what's all this equipment around us? Well, you can't miss the big old airbags. Lungs, they call them. They're not much to look at, but they do keep me in good supply of oxygen. The rest of this mostly plumbing. You have pipes sending blood out and more pipes bringing it back. This big one above us is the aorta. I pump about 2,000 gallons a day through that pipe. Why so much blood? Your body runs on oxygen, and I'm the DHL of O2. I make oxygen generate blood from the lungs and pump it into the rest of the body. When it comes back to me depleted, I pump it back over the lungs for a refill, and on it goes for something like 100 years. Do you ever get time off? Oh yeah, between each pump, I get nearly half a second off. That's what I like to call me time. It's just long enough to fill my chambers with blood for the next pump. That's not much of a break. You said it, pal. I'm a muscle. But I don't get PTO like your other muscles. I get to watch your pectorals relax all day long while I pump 100,000 times every 24 hours. Well, that gives new meaning to the Celine Dion song, My Heart Will Go On. Oh boy, don't even get me started on love songs. But you're the national symbol of passion. There are about a million songs with your name on them. Unchain My Heart, Achy Breaky Heart. Love is a feeling, and I don't do feelings. I do pumping. Love is a brain problem. those songs should be called Unchain My Amygdala and Achy Breaky Cranium. Look, I might get involved if the brain conjures up serious romantic feelings. If your genitals need some extra blood flow, for instance, I'm happy to pump a little harder to provide it. Is that something you want to get into? Actually, maybe we should save that for another interview. That's what I thought. So, who's the boss around here? You probably think the brain tells me when to pump, right? Everyone thinks that, but I'm my own boss, thank you very much. Think of me as the owner-operator of the blood department. I'm wired with my own electrical grid, and that lets me pump without assistance. Whoa, how does that work? Look here, on my right side, near my top. If you dug into my flesh here, you'd find my sinus node, which is basically a living pacemaker. It generates electrical impulses that shoot through conduction fibers to keep me pumping around 60 to 100 times a minute while you're at rest. And it sounds complex. Sure, but it's necessary. I need to be able to pump blood even when your brain shifts into overnight maintenance mode. The guy upstairs sleeps 8 hours a night. I can't afford to. Does that mean you keep pumping even if the brain dies? I could keep pumping for a while if I got supplemental oxygen. Hours, maybe a couple weeks. There are a lot of variables, but my ability to keep pumping is the reason doctors can harvest donor organs after someone dies. The brain clocks out, but the ticker keeps on ticking. But surely you work with the brain sometimes. Like if someone cuts me off while I'm driving, I can feel my heart rate go up. Explain that one. Well, it's like I said, you finally make it to the old treadmill. As I start pumping harder, I send the brain a signal to dilate your arteries to accommodate the stronger flow. Later, let's say the brain picks up a danger signal coming from your eyeballs. You see an alligator, or a charging rhino, or a brisky walking salesperson holding a clipboard. Your brain shoots me a message via your spinal cord, and I can increase blood flow to prepare you for battle. So, your communication is usually about increasing blood flow. Not always. Your brain always sends me soothing messages as a reminder to chill out and slow down. These come through the different channels called the vagus nerve. Actually, could you do me a favor? All these questions have me feeling a little stressed. Would you mind activating your vagus nerve for me right now? Do this. Take a slow, deep breath. Fill your lungs all the way. And then exhale long and slow. Feel that? That calming sensation is your vagus nerve at work, and it's helping me relax. Nice. Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death worldwide. Why? Honestly, it freaks me out, but it's not all my fault. I'm just the pump. Often the pipes are the real problem. You mean the blood vessels? Yeah, specifically the arteries, which carry blood away from the heart. They're the most vulnerable because that's where the pressure is highest. And the biggest issue is the coronary arteries. They carry blood from my lower left chamber to my muscle cells, so I can pump oxygen to myself. Problem is, they're narrow and close to the pump, so they're under a lot of pressure. If they get clogged, I start gasping for breath. That's a heart attack, right? I don't care much for that term. I'm not attacking you. I'm dying. A clogged coronary artery is my number one fear. What about a stroke? That'd be my second biggest fear. With a stroke, there's usually a clogged in a pipe that's bringing blood to the brain, like a blood clot or a hunk of plaque. That sounds bad. To say the least, the brain drinks blood like a 3-pound tick. It guzzles 20% of the oxygen I pump, and for every minute it goes thirsty, you lose about 1.9 million neurons. Okay, so the pipes can clog, but don't heart problems ever start with you, the actual heart? Sure, they do. I'm a mechanical pump, so I'm prone to mechanical problems. My valves can malfunction, for instance, or I can become too weak to pump well. That's called heart failure. Or I can have an electrical problem that causes me to beat too fast or too slow, and that's called arrhythmia. Is that dangerous? Sometimes, but not always. An occasional skipped beat may not be a problem, but if there's a short circuit, my four chambers can't communicate properly. That's when I might need a pacemaker to keep me on track. But if you want to talk about extreme electrical malfunction, I'll tell you about cardiac arrest. That happens when my signal's so broken I can't pump blood at all. And that's fatal. Without help? Yes. But if someone gives you chest compressions, I can keep pushing out blood. That buys you some time until someone zaps you with a defibrillator. If you're lucky, that'll reboot my electrical system. If I started flatlining, though, your doctor's going to try to wake me up with a big dose of adrenaline. But the odds aren't exactly in your favor at that point. I guess that's the worst case scenario. Yeah, but cardiac arrest is extreme. The most common electrical problem is actually something called atrial fibrillation, or AFib. It's when my upper chambers contract hundreds of times a minute, which you might feel as a fluttering in your chest. That doesn't sound so bad. It might not be immediately dangerous, but the risk with AFib is that my chambers aren't filling or emptying properly, which means they can't pump effectively, so blood is more likely to pool and form a clot. If I pump a clot out into the artery, that's bad news. AFib increases your risk of stroke by about 500%. Now that I'm properly scared, tell me, what can I do to make your life easier? I'm glad you asked that because I have a couple requests. For starters, could you watch your blood pressure? When it gets too high, it damages not only me, but the plumbing around me too. How do I lower my blood pressure? I don't want to be rude, but you've added some new fat tissue over the past few years, and that tissue comes with new blood vessels. As your plumbing system grows, I have to pump harder, and that drives the pressure up. And while you're at it, stop with the salty foods, fast food, and ultra-processed stuff. All that sodium draws water into your vessels, and more blood volume means higher pressure. Try to keep it to 1500 milligrams of salt a day, or 2300 milligrams at the most. Also, exercise more and stress less. A nice, peaceful jog a few times a week can do wonders. What else? Make my life easier. Give me blood that's easy to pump. I don't like when it gets too thick and sticky. Thick and sticky blood? Yeah. Don't you pay attention to your doctor? Every time you visit, She talks about things like LDL cholesterol, glucose, triglycerides. All this crud makes your blood thicker, which makes my job harder. LDL is probably the worst of them all. It's like waxing balls of fat. And when your pipes have tears in them from high pressure, the wax balls can burrow into the walls and become inflamed like little pimples. When one pops, it spills sewage into your bloodstream. That can cause a clot. Artery, pimples, gross. How do I avoid that? Don't smoke. Keep your weight down. And please exercise. I can't stress this enough. When you exercise, every part of your cardiovascular system gets a tune-up. The damaged spots heal and become less likely to rupture. A flood of nitric oxide dilates your arteries and makes them more flexible. Your immune system hauls away damaged proteins that could otherwise restrict the flow. And exercise increases your body's oxygen needs by 10 to 20 times. So I have to work harder to keep up. I'm a muscle, and if I work hard, I get strong. Why does your strength matter to me? Strength is efficiency. If I can do my job in 60 beats per minute instead of 100, I have more time to properly fill my chambers between contractions. That means your blood flows better. It also means less oxygen to do my job, so your coronary arteries don't have to strain to keep up. Okay, so what kind of exercise should I do? Hike, jog, swim, play tennis, do the cha-cha slide. I'm not picky, as long as you get me pumping harder. I feel like you're dumbing it down for me. Okay, if you want me to dial it up for you, here's my request. Alternate daily workouts between moderate and high-intensity cardio. Aim for no less than 20 minutes a day. More is better. And then add two or three strength training sessions per week. Define moderate versus high intensity cardio. Moderate intensity cardio is walking fast or power cleaning your house. You breathe harder, but you can still hold a conversation. High intensity cardio is the kind that really gets you sweating and sucking wind. Why is training so important? Nice big muscles will pull more sugar out of your blood before it can accumulate and damage your arteries. As for me, muscle can actually act as a return pump. Strong legs and strong calves, especially, can push blood back up so I don't have to strain to overcome gravity. A little muscle tone can do wonders. Does it help if I eat healthier? Absolutely. When you eat more vegetables and fiber, pulls the cholesterol-rich bile out of your gut as it passes through. So basically, you end up pooping out cholesterol, which would otherwise gunk up your arteries. Fruit, whole grains, beans, and nuts have the same effect. Think you can eat more of those? That doesn't seem to. Also, don't smoke. Don't drink too much. Stay up too late. Eat too many processed foods. Neglect your oral health or skip doctor appointments. And whatever you do, don't stress. I can't stand stress. How likely is it that you're going to kill me like my grandpa's heart killed me? Look, we're not living in the 1970s anymore. Today, I'm 66% less likely to fail from a blocked artery. What? Really? Yes. People today are better at taking care of themselves, and doctors are better at fixing pipes. If you have a blocked coronary artery, a heart doctor can snake a little catheter in and pop it open within 90 minutes of your reaching the hospital. Okay, but how will I know if I'm having a heart attack? You'll probably feel a tight pressure or squeezing sensation in your chest, but I have to warn you, your brain might be smart and all, but he's easily confused. He isn't used to hearing me complain, so he might start sending mixed signals. You might also feel pain somewhere between your jawline and upper belly. Arms, neck, and shoulders are common. You might feel sweaty, short of breath, lightheaded, or nauseated. Wow, why so many weird symptoms? Well, the brain and I don't really train for this, so your first time will be ours too. And for women, the experience can even be stranger. They're more likely than men to feel stomach effects like nausea and vomiting. They're also more likely to experience anxiety, shortness of breath, fatigue, and shoulder pain. And this heart attack pain, doesn't it just come suddenly? Sometimes, but not always. I might start sending signals weeks before the actual attack. You might first feel some discomfort while climbing a flight of stairs. Then you'll feel it while walking, going to the bathroom, cooking, or just getting out of bed. The discomfort will get easier and easier to recreate, and that means you need to get to the hospital. That's kind of scary. Can we end this on a happier note? You mean a lighter beat? A little cardio comedy there. Nice try. Thanks. Now, get lost. I have blood to pump. You've been listening to AARP on Voice Corps. I'm Kathy Cordy. The next article is under Money. Cheated Then Taxed by Sari Hara. Criminals stole $900,000 from Joan Johnson in a sophisticated imposter scam in 2023. Then the Internal Revenue Service hit her with a $60,000 income tax bill, entirely for the scam money. "It was devastating. I felt like my life was threatened during the scam," she says. She's a retired government worker who asked that her real name be concealed for her protection. The majority of the lost money was from her retirement account. "When it was over, I realized most of the stolen money counted as taxable income," she says. "I couldn't get a deduction for the lost money, and the IRS even charged me interest on taxes I couldn't pay by the deadline." Johnson's tax bill was shocking, but her situation is not uncommon. Since the 2017 tax law changed, halted a long-standing deduction for stolen money. Fraud victims across the U.S. have been slammed with federal income tax bills as high as hundreds of thousands of dollars. "It's like victimizing someone twice," says Nancy Rosner, executive director of the Community Tax Law Protection in Virginia. "The government rules make scam victims pay in more ways. Taxpayers younger than 59 and a half can also face a 10% penalty on withdrawals from a 401k, IRAs, and other retirement accounts, even if the money was scammed," Rosner says. "Many pay dramatically higher state and local income taxes that can add up to tens of thousands of dollars or more." Before 2018, taxpayers could deduct money or property lost to a scam, theft, or disaster on their federal income tax. In 2017, President Donald Trump signed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that ended most of those deductions. There are a few loopholes that help some scam victims. According to the 2025 IRS memo, victims can take a federal income tax deduction if they believe the scam would increase or safeguard their money. But that doesn't include many common scams. The taxable portion of money withdrawn in a scam counts as taxable income. That can mean big tax bills. The stakes are high. As much as $81.5 billion was scammed from older adults in 2024, according to the Federal Trade Commission. A bill in Congress would restore the deduction for money lost in scams and allow victims of scams dating back to 2018 to take the deduction if they file an amended tax return. This is one of AARP's priorities, says Clark Flint Barr, an AARP's Government Affairs Director for Financial Security. We have endorsed this legislation and are hopeful that it will pass. Meanwhile, AARP is exploring ways to bring relief to scam victims hit with high Medicare premiums, says Andrew Skolnick, an AARP Government Affairs Director for Medicare. Currently, in order to appeal, beneficiaries must show proof that the criminals behind the scam were convicted. But few scammers are caught or convicted, he says. AARP is recommending letting victims present financial records as proof instead. Some scam victims may be tempted to ignore tax liabilities, but that will only make things worse. If you've been scammed, talk to someone and be sure to keep statements of scam losses and records of interactions with criminals. A tax attorney or legal clinic can help, but so can an accountant who can give you advice on the next steps. It's better to file your tax return than to skip it because you feel overwhelmed. You've been listening to AARP on Voice Corps. I'm Kathy Cordy. Stay tuned for more on Voice Corps, your audio access to the world.